Good morning, Connecticut. And to our friends across the Sound, it's Director of Public Affairs, John Vokette. Thanks for tuning in to Connoisseur Media's award-winning public affairs program for the people, bringing you the latest information to help address concerns in our communities tied to youth, the economy, public health and safety, aging, education, and the environment. Today, we're going to be diving back into watching out for your health and the health of those you love as we open up the latest Lung Association's State of Tobacco Control Report to try and figure out why Connecticut is failing its residents when it comes to funding tobacco education, awareness, and cessation programs. Then we're going to circle back with the Connecticut Psychological Association for a candid conversation about the ways insurance companies deal or do not deal with supporting the mental health concerns of state residents, especially as the pandemic continues to collectively wear us all down. Then we're going to close catching up with and inviting you to a cool event being presented by the Connecticut Epilepsy Advocate and let you know how to get in on all the Star Wars themed fun. We'll be back with these segments and more on the award-winning For the People with me, John Vokette, right after this reminder. Essential workers who were unable to work after contracting COVID-19 and experienced lost wages, out-of-pocket medical costs, or funeral expenses, financial relief may be available. The Connecticut Office of the State Comptroller invites essential workers affected by COVID-19 to apply for the Connecticut Essential Worker COVID-19 Assistance Fund. If you contracted COVID-19 and lived in Connecticut between March 10, 2020 and July 20, 2021, you're qualified to apply. For details, visit ctessentialworkerrelief.org. Well, as you heard in the introduction, the 20th annual State of Tobacco Report has been released. State of Tobacco Control Report has been released by the American Lung Association. And as we have for pretty much all of those 20 years, we've tapped our resources at the American Lung Association's Connecticut Division. Again, with us on the line to open up the show is their Director of Advocacy, Ruth Canovi. And today, folks, it's really a call to action because we have been talking and talking, and seemingly every year we hope and hope and hope that the money that's coming into Connecticut from settlements with big tobacco so long ago, it seems like a distant memory. Maybe you've even forgotten about it, but millions are pouring into the state every year with the intention for that money to somehow stem the tide of death and disease that's caused by tobacco. And somehow every year that money finds its way into many other avenues other than what it is intended for. And as Ruth so aptly put in her release when this report was made available earlier this week, in 2022, the time has come. Connecticut needs to redouble its effort to pass proven policies that are being called for in this State of Tobacco Control Report to help end tobacco use. We can't wait another 20 years and allow another generation to suffer from tobacco-caused addiction, disease, and death. And we know from the epidemic expansion of the use of vaping products by younger and younger users and the addictive nicotine that is in those vaping products. Now is the time, folks. So we hope you'll listen through the program and then pick up and review this State of Tobacco Control Report and then use that as a tool to contact your legislator. The legislative session is about to convene, and this is the year we really want to make something happen. So, Ruth, I will step down from the sip box and turn things over to you. Thanks for joining us again. A lot of happy news, a lot of good marks on this report, but it seems like a bad chemistry class. We can't get out of this couple of ruts that Connecticut has been stuck in for so many years.
Yeah. I mean, thank you so much for having me and covering this important report. I can't believe it's been 20 years. And it's really a mixed bag of grades. And to be honest, it's one of the better report cards I've been able to talk about. We have made some progress. And so I can start there maybe, and then, go into, you did a great job really outlining some of the main priorities we're going to have for the year ahead. We have two B's, a C, and two F's. And so the bees that were, you know, there, one is tobacco taxes, right? We know that policy that helps reduce tobacco use is higher cost. And so tobacco tax rate is the second highest in the country for cigarettes. We get a B instead of an A because there's other products that aren't taxed at the same rate. And so they're more affordable. Little cigars, e-cigarettes are taxed at a very different rate. And so we want to look at tax parity that would bring us up to really kind of protecting all people and all products the same way. And so, but we do decently well in that area.
Or at least incentivizing those users of those products to maybe buy less or not buy,
right?
Because
exactly.
the cost and the economic factor is starting to beat up on their wallets.
Right. And so we've seen that that works when there's a significant increase. And so we're not asking for an increase in cigarette taxes, but at some point when we're ready to look at this, we want to see all tobacco products taxed at the similar rate. So, you know, that's a place to go, but we do decently well compared to the rest of the country. And so I feel like that's something we should take note of and be proud of.
Yeah.
And the other area that we got to be in was smoke-free workplaces and our laws. And this is one that we actually saw a win in. And we were in Connecticut, one of the first states that passed a smoke-free indoor workplace law in 2003. And we've been trying to close loopholes for a very long time. And this year we saw some real improvements. And so, you know, there's things like people are often surprised that for a long time in Connecticut, workplaces with fewer than 5 employees could still have smoke. You know, people could smoke anywhere in their establishments.
Mm-hmm.
Places could have smoking rooms, things like that. There's a lot of just loopholes that existed that didn't equally protect employees from exposure to secondhand smoke that were closed this year. And so we're really excited that we made some progress. And I think this year we expect that we're going to have to do some protecting and paying attention to kind of pushing back on that. But that
sure.
was something that I think we're pleased with.
Mm-hmm. No, just real quick, I just want to drill into one point in that, in the smoke-free air category. And that is that
right.
while casinos and gaming establishments do fall under the prohibition, tribal establishments are not subject to the state law. How are Connecticut's tribal entities doing? Do you have any appeal to them? Or is their leadership making a difference?
That right now, because of COVID and kind of the changes that have been made, both of those establishments right now are not allowing smoking in their establishments. And so we certainly call on them to consider making that change a permanent one.
Mm.
And we've seen throughout the country that casinos in tribal casinos are really taking the lead and making some real significant changes in this. And so we would certainly welcome having those conversations and would love to see some leadership in that space.
Yeah.
But we also recognize that they don't fall under the Connecticut jurisdiction in that space.
Yeah. So I guess non-smoking consumers and patrons of Connecticut's tribal casinos would be best served taking their concern and their advocacy to continue the smoke-free environment to the management of the casinos they patronize.
Yeah.
Right? Just let them
absolutely.
Know. Absolutely. With all the casino competition now in the Northeast, if we had to, we would certainly go somewhere that was smoke-free or made to be smoke-free. So that's a good message to send.
That's a great point.
Great.
Yeah.
So now we're looking at cessation services. We talk about them all the time here on this program, and yet we are only kind of riding along on average grade here with a C.
We are. We get a C. And this is one of those ones where there are some things that we do great in Connecticut. We have, you know, Medicaid has a comprehensive benefit. So people who get Medicaid services, have access to them, can get services and access to quit. Even our state employee health plan does a decent job in that space. However, we also look at our quit line, which is the sole source of people who are uninsured and people who may not know how to access, you know, their insurance and those types of things. And we do such a bad job of investing into our quit line in the state that that's where our marks really hit us. And it is important to note, and I, you know, we've had a lot of conversations internally about this grade too, but folks who are in the uninsured population tend to smoke and use tobacco at higher rates. And so it's really important that we make sure that people have access to these programs, because we know so many people who are addicted to these substances want to quit. And so we want to really make sure that people have access to cessation. Yeah. And so that's where we get hit in this grade. And it's an area that we could make a big difference in.
Very good. And the cost value relationship, I know that's something talk about, but I mean, for the dime spent on cessation programs and messaging and educating people about them and how to get them and all the benefits and how many can access them for very low or no cost, the payback comes for decades and decades as the public health and the weight on insurance companies and the public health system for tobacco-related illness proliferates, for people sometimes into their 80s and 90s. So suffice it to say, this is important.
So a wise investment. Mm-hmm.
So we had such high hopes for flavored tobacco product being addressed in the legislature last year, talking around this time. You think this is the year something's going to happen?
I don't know. And last year, I feel like we learned a lot last year. And frankly, the Lung Association's position is that if we're going to address flavored tobacco products, we need to address all flavored tobacco products. Because what we've seen is, even with the federal administration, at one point they restricted flavors in one type of e-cigarettes and not others. And we saw kids flock to the types that were still allowed. And so we don't want to see a situation where we're restricting flavors in e-cigarettes and then we see all of these people who are addicted move to other tobacco products. And so our real focus is, if we're going to do this, we want to do it right. Also, because as I mentioned before, we passed a law in 2003 on trying, smoke-free workplaces. And we're now, almost 20 years later, finally closing up some of those loopholes. And so that's a real priority for us, is kind of doing the flavored tobacco products right and well, and protecting all people and not leaving any certain populations behind. It's really important. And so this year, the Lung Association has really been focusing on funding in our conversations. Last year, we heard from a lot of folks saying, the fact that we are not funding anything in regards to preventing young people from starting and really, really investing in people who want to quit, let's start there. And so for us, this year, we're really, really focusing with lawmakers on pushing funding. Every year we've talked about this fact, and I heard you do a great job of explaining it in the intro, but, we get hundreds of million dollars a year in our master settlement agreement. We have these great tobacco taxes, which we know can make a difference, but we should be using some of that money to help people quit and investing in young people so they're not getting hooked. And so funding is real, major priority for us this year. I'm feeling a little hopeful that we can make a difference. For so long, we're used to asking for something and they're saying, no, we're in deficits. And our state is in a much better position to make kind of a sustainable, adequate yearly investment. So we're not piecemealing every year if we get little pittance, but really making an investment in a state tobacco control program that can make a difference. And so that's a huge priority for us this year.
Yeah, it's really amazing that the state tobacco related revenue adds up to well over $471 million.
Yeah.
And the CDC indicates that the state should be spending about $32 million of the $471 million it takes in. And the state is spending 3.7% of the recommended amount for these programs. So
right. And that's all from the federal. That's all federal money. We're not spending any state-related revenue,
right.
So we're spending some, and our Department of Health does a good job with what we've got, but we have, I think, an obligation to our kids. And really, that master settlement agreement made with the tobacco industry was to use these funds to combat the damage that tobacco does on our communities. And so there's a real progress we can make. And like you said, with return on investment, we've seen other states where they've invested for a long time in these programs, and they see 2-to-1, 5-to-1 returns on their investment in that short amount of time. And so if you look further on, imagine what we could do in the state in really saving some money, but also saving lives.
Yeah, and every single taxpayer is reaching into their pockets and handing over money every year that amounts to over $2 billion in healthcare costs right here in Connecticut for tobacco-related issues. And the return, when you look at the fact that the state is making roughly about 20% of that $2 billion in tobacco-related revenue every year,
yeah,
and only spending 1.2 million, and zero of that money is actually being generated by the state. It's all coming through the settlement. It should really put the fire under everyone, because whether you smoke or not, you're still reaching into your pocket and doling out those taxes that in part underwrite tobacco related illness. And you're reaching into your pocket if you are a tobacco consumer, and in some cases, depending on your product of choice, are paying a massive premium on top of the cost,
yeah,
of the product. Whether you believe in cessation or you're interested in cessation, there's no doubt that you probably know someone who has suffered from some sort of a tobacco related illness, God forbid, lung cancer. This really should be the year to get it done.
That's the hope. We're working hard to make that happen.
Well, we appreciate your time, as always, Ruth, for getting the information out here. The report card for Connecticut is decent. Most parents probably would not be proud of it if their kid came home with 2 B's, a C, and 2 F's.
They wouldn't be putting that on the refrigerator,
that wouldn't be
right?
Going up on the fridge, right? Yeah,
no.
Back in the back of the deep freezer, maybe. But this is the year. So if you'd like to learn more, you can go to lung.org and look up the State of Tobacco Control Report. It was just released earlier this week, and lung.org will also provide you with all kinds of great information and resources if you're looking for assistance, if you are already suffering from a tobacco-related illness, if you are looking for ways to find cessation classes. Our friends here at Connecticut's chapter of the American Lung Association are working to save lives by improving lung health and preventing lung disease through research, education, and advocacy, including all the great work our guest Ruth Canovi does on the award-winning For the People. So Ruth, we'll talk to you again soon. Thank you so much for your time this morning. Well, regular listeners, especially over the past couple of years, know we've got a great new resource and a fantastic relationship with Jennifer Duran. Dr. Duran is the president of the Connecticut Psychological Association and also an assistant professor at the Yale School of Medicine. And she sent me a note a couple of weeks ago telling me how things are starting to get worse in regards to insurance issues with members of her association and their clients and patients. And I wanted to find out more. So I set up a call today, and she is on the line with us for this midpoint segment. Jennifer, how are you?
Hi, John. Good morning. Thank you so much for having me on today.
So usually I'm hearing about something out in the world and getting in touch with you guys. It was a little bit of a turnaround to hear you needing to help kind of explain and educate our listeners around Connecticut about some issues. And, you know, here we are 2 years into the pandemic and then some, and certainly certainly, as we said in the intro, issues tied to the pandemic and our health and jobs and the economy are wearing us all down. But for those who went into the pandemic with challenges, mental health concerns, stress, anxiety, it only got worse. And for some, it got exponentially worse. And a lot of these people really rely on, their insurance to help them offset the expense of getting the necessary help that they need. We know here in Connecticut, there was we were kind of a leading state in developing parity in terms of services for mental health issues, and yet here you are, the president of the Connecticut Psychological Association, on behalf of all of your members and their clients, reaching out because of a problem. So we'll get into that almost immediately, but for those who may have not heard our previous chats, can you just give them a quick rundown on this organization that you represent?
Absolutely. I'm here from the Connecticut Psychological Association. We represent the practice of psychology and psychological science throughout the state of Connecticut, and work really hard on legislative issues, access to care, helping shape policies in our state that, ensure that everyone has the access to mental health services that they need. And I'm actually here today with data, not just from our organization, but with other organizations as well, representing other mental health disciplines. We've been, talking together a lot about these issues and working together on trying to come up with some solutions.
Good. Before we get into that, I think a lot of people who may be thinking about that they're at the point where they may need to talk to someone, they may need to get some professional support or find out if they actually need it, if they need some sort of a clinical diagnosis. They may be wondering where to go and if they should be seeking out the services of a psychologist or a psychiatrist. Can you quickly run down the difference?
Definitely. Psychologists are doctoral level professionals who offer psychotherapy and evidence-based behavioral treatments to address, common issues and problems, anything from health behavior issues all the way up to, more serious clinical concerns. Psychiatry is the doctor level profession that is engaged in medication, so in writing prescriptions and pharmacological management of these same issues.
So I guess, in fact, a lot of times a psychologist will, if need be, work in tandem with a psychiatrist if a client may need additional support in terms of, pharmacology or something like that.
Yeah, for some things, psychotherapy alone is enough. For some things, medication alone is the right choice. And for many things, a combined approach and really, tackling the problem from both angles is shown to produce the best results. So it depends on what someone's experiencing, what they're going through. A consultation with either type of professional would also be helpful, I think, in figuring out the right next step for someone and what's going to be the most helpful.
Very good. So as we have talked to you over the past few conversations, and anyone who's engaged in any kind of support for folks suffering from stress, anxiety, depression, and clinical mental health issues, the problem over the course of this COVID era has gotten bigger. More people are looking for services, and yet at the same time, the pool of those that are able to provide those services or the resources to underwrite those services are both shrinking, right?
Yeah, and honestly, it's one of the reasons that we're trying to talk about this so much and work on this. We are really concerned, not just with the fact that people are doing worse and we're seeing a tremendous increase in the demand for mental health services, but that it's becoming, for the average individual, harder and harder to find services, to find a provider who still has room left in their caseload, to find a provider in our state, especially, that still takes insurance, and I know we're going to get into some of the reasons for that. And what the situation is creating is an increasingly, just worse access to care issue, and the fact that the average individual has to work harder than they should have to work when they're suffering to find care and then to have that care paid for with, you know, the insurance that they should be able to rely on.
We have also touched upon in our previous conversations this immense, exponentially greater need for services and lack of them, especially for youths and adolescents. Certainly many of these individuals may still be on an insurance program of their parents. Others may be on the marketplace and have bought their own. But the assistance for younger people who, for some, experiencing these problems is a much greater burden to them, both physically and mentally. It's blowing up. It's really being described as an epidemic is quite accurate.
It's more than accurate, right? And it is so difficult. And, you know, we get emails from people and, again, are working with other groups, and people are at breaking point, and consumers are at breaking point. I was talking with a psychologist, one of our members, just a few weeks ago, and she was sharing, you know, that she's been trying, you know, so hard to help a family with, you know, a child suffering from OCD get coverage for her services, and it's been impossible to do so, and has taken hours and hours of time with still no resolution. And on top of that, this family came to her after 6 months of work to try to find a provider in network who could treat OCD and who had a specialty in that kind of treatment. It's not an isolated story. And when you're suffering, if you're in crisis, if you're really needing help, 6 months is an unacceptable amount of time. Not being able to have services covered when there's a clear need and a clear diagnosis is unacceptable, right? None of what's happening is okay.
The other thing that comes to mind as you describe the challenge of one of your members, which is probably duplicated across a massive cross-section of them, is that for every half hour, these providers have to spend slogging through correspondence, waiting on hold to talk to an insurance provider, maybe sometimes submitting claims or tweaking claim submissions over and over and over again, only to see a trickle of response in terms of underwriting or an outright denial, is taking time away from what they could be devoting to both their current pool and additional patients who may be looking for that time.
That's exactly right. And again, the survey data we have, it includes more than 600 mental health professionals, you know, across disciplines in our state. And they're reporting, you know, some of the biggest, most popular insurance companies that just to make an inquiry, just to make a phone call and connect with someone, it's a 60-minute or longer wait. And you know, oftentimes you finally get through and then your issue's not resolved. So, yes, if this insurance system, which frankly is broken, and we've known that for a while, it's just, I think, becoming, you know, more and more obvious in the situation that we're all in. You know, the system needs to be fixed, right? And, you know, providers, think about all the other patients that could be served with the hours a week that people are spending, you know, trying to get paid, fighting denials that don't make sense, advocating on behalf of their patients because they can't get services covered. It's taking time away from people who need care and who are unable to find it. And this is a fixable problem, right? The insurance problems that we're seeing, they're not new, they're fixable, but everyone has to kind of commit to fixing them.
Yeah. Dr. Jennifer Duran is a president of the Connecticut Psychological Association. She's also an assistant professor at the Yale School of Medicine. We're going to come back after a quick break and talk a little bit more about this problem that's facing mental health and psychologist consumers. We're going to teach you a new word that you maybe never heard of called clawbacks. We're going to talk about a little bit more about mental health parity and why providers are feeling that the spirit of mental health parity is not being honored, especially when it comes to insurance claims. We'll be back with Dr. Duran. Stick with us. Lots more to talk about. Hey, do you volunteer for or receive services from any of the hundreds of nonprofit agencies, community groups, and grassroots organizations in our region? Or maybe you're just looking for ways to help. If your favorite nonprofit is hosting a fundraiser or community building activity, or you'd like to find a nonprofit to support in your neighborhood, just go to our radio station website, hit the events tab, and find one, or discover some of the many causes supported by Connoisseur Media. I'm John Voquette, your public affairs director here at Connoisseur Media, and we'll be back to the award-winning For the People right after this news. Hey, the Arts Alliance of Stratford's Through Our Eyes art show and sale is happening now, and it's running through February 18th at the Sterling House Community Center on Main Street, celebrating the creativity of local Black artists. The show is being curated by local artist Willie Scape. The gallery is scheduled to be open daily Monday through Saturday, but those interested in visiting should call to ensure the space is open, and visitors will be expected to follow the latest COVID safety protocols. Call 203-378-2606 for gallery information, or just visit artsallianceofstratford.org for further details. We're back. Thanks for sticking with us. We're with Dr. Jennifer Duran. She's the president of the Connecticut Psychological Association, as well as a professor at the Yale School of Medicine. She reached out to the award-winning For the People a couple of weeks ago after she and so many of her members just are getting weary of hitting their heads against the wall in terms of trying to do the best by their patients when the insurance companies who are supposed to be partners in that treatment program often are no-shows or are coming to the table with too little, too late. Speaking of too late, Jennifer, teach us about the word clawbacks.
Sure. So clawbacks is something, again, it's not a new thing that has happened with insurance company, but it refers to, you know, you submit your claims, you get paid for services provided. And then, you know, at some point in the future, the insurance company comes back to you and says, actually, we want that, you know, money back. And, you know, have some oftentimes very obscure, unclear, or what a provider feels is inaccurate justification for demanding that money back. The increase in requests for clawbacks from insurance companies has been astronomical during the pandemic. And, you know, providers are telling us they're getting a lot more requests than is typical, and sometimes up to 2 years after a patient has been seen and services have been provided and reimbursed, you know, which raises a whole other host of issues, right? You may not even be seeing that patient anymore. How do you work with them to, you know, get it resolved and get whatever is needed to be resubmitted back to the insurance company? So not only are there tremendous delays in getting paid and, you know, denials that frankly should not be happening. But then sometimes you do get paid and then the insurance company is coming back to you 2 years later and saying, we want all this money back. Hours and hours and hours of time, tremendous amount of lost income. Again, and what our providers are telling us is like, we can't do it anymore. I can't afford to take insurance. You know, it's been an act of charity. And even at that, like now I'm losing money, right? I'm not getting paid at all. I just need to drop out of,
yeah,
you know,
services
the panel.
Yeah, services have been rendered that were assumed to be covered. The coverage was honored in good faith. And then all of a sudden, 6 months, 12 months, 24 months, somebody who may be on the upside of their concern that erupted in the weeks and months after the COVID pandemic hit America, their provider could be getting a bill to pay back for those services right now, here two years down the road. We talked at the beginning of the program about Connecticut being on the forefront in terms of mental health parity, but yet many of your members feel that the principles of mental health parity, as well as something called network adequacy, are being violated. What's that all about?
Yes. So mental health parity is the fact that behavioral health care, that mental health issues should be covered at, you know, the same rates and with the same, integrity as medical issues, as physical health care issues. It's a law. And yet many, many concerns from consumers and providers that it's not being followed and that mental health care is not being reimbursed when it should be. People are having to jump through all kinds of hoops that they don't have to for physical conditions or other medical conditions most of the time. Network adequacy is a requirement of insurance companies. And what that means is that every insurance company has to have an adequate number of in-network providers to serve the consumers, to meet the needs that are out there. What we are finding consistently, especially with some of the bigger insurance companies, the most popular ones, is that their lists are outdated. They are not taking providers off the lists when providers are letting them know that they're leaving the panel or that they've left the panel. And what that looks like is, you know, a consumer going to a website, taking a list of in-network providers and hitting roadblock after roadblock after roadblock because the lists are inaccurate so that they can appear, right? They appear to be sufficient. There appear to be a number of providers available. And in actuality, you know, people are finding time and time again that that's not the case, or again, that it takes them months, right, to actually find someone and connect someone who is still taking the insurance and who you know, has openings beyond that. I think almost every provider that I know of, every mental health provider in the state, is not accepting new patients. They're beyond capacity. They're seeing more people than, you know, they even would typically be seeing and just don't have any more room.
Hmm. And these systematic problems are not only affecting the access to care and health equity for the patient, but when you think of private providers who are a fairly substantial number here in Connecticut, I mean, these are like the same kind of small business people as the hair salon or the boutique or the coffee shop. I mean, when you put them into a box and just consider them small business, they are under quite an onus here with this issue.
Yes, definitely. It's an unsustainable small business model, right? And in no other industry, as you're talking about, right, do you walk into a store or go to receive a service and then, you know, tell the provider they can't get paid for providing their service, right? I've never gotten a haircut and said, so sorry, I know I really needed that haircut, but I'm not going to pay you. Or, sure. Or I'm going to pay you in 6 months for this haircut today.
Or walk back in there 6 months or a year later and say, hey, remember that haircut you gave me back in 2021? I need the money back. see how that flies. Yeah. Well,
exactly.
We've got about three or four more minutes with you, Jennifer. Tell us what can be done.
Yeah, so there is actually a lot that can be done. And I want to convey to all the consumers and people out there who are struggling, who know exactly what I'm talking about today, be persistent. Don't give up. It is still possible to find help. I know it is frustrating. I know it's taking time. We are doing everything we can to fix things and to put pressure on everyone to fix things. There are resources available. I'm going to recommend a strategy that we've seen to be really effective. If you are having difficulties like this, if you can't find a provider, if you can't get your care covered, pick up the phone and call your congressional representative. Tell them what's happening and ask for help. They will help and they are able to intervene and, you know, apply some pressure and ask for something to be resolved when it's unacceptable. We've seen it work. We've seen it be successful. If you know that a law isn't being followed, like parity or network advocacy, again, like pick up the phone, call your representative, call the attorney general, send an email, you know, to the AG here in Connecticut and let them know. The more that people hear about this issue, not just from providers, but from you, but from the people who are suffering and who are, you know, struggling to find help, the more that we can let them know, the more that we can share stories, the more awareness we can bring to this issue, the more likely it is that we can fix this broken system and get some changes made. In terms of where to actually go to find help, I can remind everybody that there's a lot of great resources. Organizations like ours, like the Connecticut Psychiatric Society, right? Reach out, ask for a referral, share what the need is and what the insurance panel is and see if a connection can be made for you. There's also a number of other resources. John, I'm not sure if you want me to kind of go through them now, some of the numbers that can be called.
Yeah, let's get a real quick rundown just in case folks want to jot that down or they hear it on the podcast and want to make that call.
Sure. Connecticut does have a referral hotline. All you have to do is dial 211. They also have a website, 211ct.org. They will work with you and help you find a provider. NAMI, the National Alliance for Mental Illness, has a helpline. The phone number is 800-950-NAMI. NAMI, you can reach them directly and they will help. And if you're in crisis, if you're really in a bad way and need to talk to someone immediately, there's always the suicide prevention hotlines, which can be reached at 800-273-8255 anytime around the clock, 24 hours a day.
Right. And for anyone who doesn't think that, calling their federal lawmakers, Senators Blumenthal or Murphy and Murphy, or their district U.S. state U.S. Congress person, that certainly does make a difference. But here in Connecticut, coming up in just a week or so, the next session of the legislature is going to convene, and pediatric mental health is going to be a huge priority for them. So don't think that you're going to make a call to your local state representative or senator and that your plea will not be heard, because it's quite possible that the hard work and hopefully the results that they get in regards to pediatric mental health in this session will raise all boats in terms of psychological help and underwriting and insurance support for everyone. So I want to thank you, Jennifer, as always. Great resource, an important issue, and I hope the folks who are listening to For the People are able to put your suggestions to work or utilize your resources to get the help they or someone that they love needs for the issues that they might be having, whether it's directly related to the pandemic or not. Dr. Jennifer Doran is the president of the Connecticut Psychological Association and an assistant professor at the Yale School of Medicine. Jennifer, thank you so much for your time today and this important conversation. Well, we're always thrilled to catch up with Robert Fiore. He is the Connecticut Epilepsy Advocate. And Robert, you're really one of my favorite interviews and really one of the longer reoccurring guests and friends and resources to For the People. So I really appreciate that you sought us out from the very beginning when you had an idea in your head that you wanted to take your personal epilepsy experience and some of the things that you learned both as it was happening and along the way, and share that resource with folks, not just here in Connecticut anymore, but across the entire country. And the Connecticut Epilepsy Advocate and your website, ct-ea.org, is a fantastic resource, not just for folks throughout the state of Connecticut now, but across the country. And you have all kinds of information on it, testimonials, support groups, medical alert details, Social Security disability, prescription information. And you also have stepped up in a big, huge way with blood drives, both as a supporter and a donor. Congratulations on your latest donor milestone, I have to say. And now getting into something that's a little bit more fun. We spent the rest of the program this morning talking about some pretty serious business. Not that epilepsy isn't, but we're happy to be able to end the show with a way for people to kind of get their heads out of the whole COVID thing for a couple of hours and have some great fun and maybe help benefit the Connecticut Epilepsy Advocate. So thanks again for being part of the program. How are you doing?
Pretty good, John. Thank you very much. Just want to clarify one thing. I'm not able to donate blood anymore.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay. However, if everything goes well when we have our Battle the Badges blood drive in a few months, our organization will be the one that brings in 300 gallons since we started blood drives.
Oh, okay. So you are, while you're not a donor, you are a huge advocate for the cause, and you put the hands on when it comes to not just making these blood drives happen, but as you just pointed out, bringing people in your network to bear on behalf of the Connecticut Epilepsy Advocate. So that's great.
Yep, absolutely. Sponsor blood drives. We run them. So it's an amazing thing to do, and I love doing it six times a year.
Yep. You also have gained such a level of support that you are able to facilitate some funding that is providing some strategic assistance to folks who may be in a little bit of a financial dip, right?
Absolutely. If people fit the criteria and they cannot afford their medication, their transportation, their doctor's bills, you know, naturally we check everything out first, and if we're able to help them in that way, we'll provide the medication, put them on a program, pay for their doctor's bills.
So as the Connecticut Epilepsy Advocate has kind of gone legit in terms of a 501c3 status, along has come a little bit more administrative work as well. And that also means being able to recruit and maintain a very active board and close circle of top volunteers. Tell us a little bit about how the volunteers are really helping make your work hopefully a little bit easier and certainly more effective and widespread.
Sure. And as you are aware, we're in our 13th year of existence. And because we're growing, we've already added another board member, and another one is pending. We're just waiting him to write up his bio because of the growth that we've had all this time.
So when you go for the big ask to get people onto your board, are you pretty much dealing with folks that you've somehow had a relationship with already, or are you finding at this point that people are hearing about you and kind of meeting in the middle?
It primarily the ones that I have a relationship with, but there's other people have approached us, and we've sat down with them. And the other thing that we've really focused on more in the past year is our professional advisory board. And we tell people all the time, other organizations, their professional advisory board is a series of doctors. They list 20, probably 18 are resting in peace, but their names are there. Mm. Well, the doctors we have on our professional advisory board, it's a wide range. There's three of them there. And where they cover both for neurology and general medication is across the entire state. And we have a board member who's a disability attorney, gentleman that does insurance, and a woman that helps with prescriptions. So it's not your average professional advisory board. There's a wide range of what's there.
Hmm. And what are some other opportunities for people that may be able to come with a willingness to volunteer?
What we're looking for now is someone to sit in the office, well, not physically in the office, yes, and help us with some grant writing. That would be great.
Very good. So another way that the Connecticut Epilepsy Advocate is spreading across the state is through support groups. And I understand you're looking maybe for another community or two to broaden that effort over the next year or so.
Absolutely. Right now with COVID-19, all the support groups are once a month on Zoom. And turnout is pretty good considering everything. And that's on our website, too.
And hopefully once you're able to reconvene in person, those groups are centered in what communities?
Yes. And we would like to get more support groups open in the upper Litchfield County and another part of New Haven County. But for now, where the four locations were, and again, doing everything on Zoom, that's more than adequate.
Very good. So we have now, as we talked about all of the services that you're trying to provide, as well as trying to bring on a grant writer, a lot of this comes through the great support of your closest allies, board members and volunteers. But you're broadening things out to try to make the Connecticut Epilepsy Advocate both accessible and known to a lot more people. And you're doing that with the help of one of our local hockey teams. Tell us more about Star Wars Night.
Yep, Star Wars Night is our only fundraiser this year. It's a great event. It's the Bridgeport Islanders and the Wilkes-Barre Scranton Penguins. They are the farm teams for the NHL. Mm-hmm. It takes place on Saturday, February 26th. It starts at 7 p.m. at Webster Bank Arena in Bridgeport. Great place. Now, naturally, there's COVID-19 protocols there. And during the event, they have a 50-50 raffle, a chuck-a-puck. And if you want your tickets, you could purchase them online. There's the barcode that you could scan, but I just think it'd be a great night together. And the beauty of this venue is the fact that because it's inside and you can sit way more than 6 feet apart because they have a multitude of seats there. So we're looking at the safety of it, too.
So tell us a little bit about how the Connecticut Epilepsy Advocate can benefit at this game.
All of the funding that comes into us will be used wisely for everything we mentioned before, and also when new clients come up and they're seeking help from us, whether it's financially or in other ways, the monies that are brought in from here definitely will help.
So what are the, you've got a 50-50 raffle going and something called Chuck-a-Puck. What's that?
Yeah. Chuck-a-Puck is a cute little challenge where people go on the ice and they just have a blast doing that. This is the first time, so we've seen it on TV, but we want to see it in person. It's really nice.
Okay. You're calling it Star Wars Night. Is there some thematic tie to the Empire?
Absolutely, and that's the name that the Islanders give it for their events. They have a choice names for the ones that you can pick from, and they had said, I think Star Wars Night is perfect for your Connecticut Epilepsy Advocate.
Very good. Let's talk a little bit more about what you're hearing and seeing on a national and global level in terms of research and developments in the world of epilepsy and trying to make the lives of individuals with epilepsy better. We've got a couple more minutes with you. What are a couple of the things that you're seeing that are happening across the nation and coming out of research institutions?
The research is always ongoing, and there's different medications. One of the things besides research, and I have to mention that's super important, is the high cost of prescription medications. You'll see on TV all the time that you can get your medication for free or for so many dollars, but those are our generic medications and not brand. And the formulary mix in a generic is not the same as a brand. So we've been advocating for that all the time to lower the cost of prescription medications. And we already submitted another state bill proposal. It's like the sixth year in a row. Myself and dozens of others just cannot use a generic medication. It doesn't work. And the high cost of brand prescriptions, oh, it's just unbelievable. So we're constantly fighting for that.
You also went to bat for HB 5450 in your capacity to advocate for the palliative use of marijuana. Is there anything on the legislative agenda this coming February here in Connecticut or on the national agenda that you're putting your energy toward?
Yeah, what the one thing we're looking for to work with, we were working with one of the state senators here. And they introduced in Washington, D.C., a lower prescription cost bill. And sadly, that fell by the wayside. So we're going to try to talk to Washington, D.C. again and see what they can bring up on a national level. And as far as the palliative use of medical marijuana for children, we always want everyone to know that is the oil, the cannabis oil, and the THC level has to be at 0.3% or less because mm-hmm. you don't want anyone getting high.
Sure. Yes. And we've heard from guests that you've been able to bring on this program how well it works. So we really appreciate once again your partnership and your presence here. The Connecticut Epilepsy Advocate serves all of the United States as well as Connecticut's communities. If you would like to find out more or link to tickets for Star Wars Night to benefit the Epilepsy Advocate, just go to ctea.org. Their founder, Robert Fiore, is a regular resource and a great point person where we learn about all new stuff going on related to epilepsy. Robert, thank you so much for your time this morning. You've been listening to our award-winning public affairs program for the people. The opinions expressed on this broadcast represent those of our guests and host. If you have a suggestion for an issue, a guest, or a PSA relevant to the audience and community served by our radio station, you must make a request for consideration in writing to me via email at john.voquette@connoisseurct.com. We do not accept pitches or requests for coverage by phone. Remember, no part of this program may be copied, disseminated, or rebroadcast. Our public file detailing the many critical community and state issues addressed on For the People can be reviewed upon request during normal business hours at 440 Wheeler's Farms Road in Milford or on our station website. Our theme music is by Rick Miller and Scott's, with original music by Noel Viette. I'm Director of Public Affairs, John Voquette. Join us again this time next week for more conversation and information on the award-winning For the People. And don't forget, you can listen to this and other For the People podcasts anytime on iTunes or under the podcast tab on our station's website. Until this time next week, thanks for listening.
Hey guys, have you heard of Goldbelly? It's this amazing site where they ship the most iconic, famous foods from restaurants across the country, anywhere, nationwide. I've never found a more perfect gift than food. Goldbelly ships Chicago deep dish pizza, New York bagels, Maine lobster rolls, and even Ina Garten's famous cakes. So, if you're looking for a gift for the food lover in your life, head to goldbelly.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code GIFT. That's goldbelly.com, promo code GIFT.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.